Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In the first segment of our show, we're going to hear the story of a person with a disability who's gone through some rather unique struggles, but for personal reasons, asked to remain anonymous. Can you tell me a little bit about the journey of discovery you've taken to recognize this?
Okay, well, to give you, Kim, a sense of what I've gone through and where I've been, I was in high school when this whole thing blew up, and it takes time to come to terms with what you're thinking and what you're feeling, and for me, I'm not one to be very good with identifying emotions. So when I was 14, I kind of was thinking about my day. I actually was packing my lunch for the next school day, and I was thinking about my day and, you know, different things, and it just all of a sudden hit me that I may be attracted to women at that point. And I was just 14 at the time. And that scared, to be quite honest, that scared the crap out of me. I didn't tell anyone. I couldn't tell them. I didn't know how they would react. So I kept it inside for about a year. And during that year, some different emotions came up. Like, I didn't always feel feminine. I mean, I looked feminine because I had the clothes, but my body just felt wrong. It felt like a bodysuit I couldn't get out of. It felt like I had body parts where they shouldn't be. I didn't have the right body part where it would be. And it just felt wrong. And finally one night I broke down and I told a person in my family. And they disagreed, and I had told them that I like girls and sometimes I feel like a boy, just to kind of ease them into the idea that I may actually be male. Like I said, they disagreed, so I just kind of felt like I should pick one side or the other, whether I should feel like a boy or like girls. And at that point, liking girls was, quote, easier at this point. So being 15, I just kind of stopped and just kind of said, okay, you can like girls, but you can't be a boy. And that's what I told myself for about 5 years. And just this past summer, I couldn't take it anymore, and it came out again. And that same person who I told disagreed again. And it's just, now it's been harder for me, considering now I've come to terms with it, but they have not.
So, in terms of your disability, do you think it's played a role?
I definitely think it has, just because of the fact that with my disability, I am physically different. I am in a wheelchair. I do have cerebral palsy, which is something, generally speaking, people judge you for. I mean, they don't they may judge you indirectly, they may judge you directly. It doesn't matter. It's still judgment. I've had people think that I'm mentally incapable just because I'm in a wheelchair. And please, just while I'm on this topic, the wheelchair is how I get around. It's not who I am. So I definitely believe it has played a part, because I'm not only in a wheelchair using this to get around, which makes me look different. Now I've told my family that I'm basically choosing, quote, choosing to be a boy, that I want to be a boy. Even though it's not a choice, that's basically what it's been.
So when it comes to your disability, that's the reason they're kind of assuming that your education can only go so far and that these feelings are more or less a phase.
When it comes to the education, it's not just because of the wheelchair. My family sees me as very unhappy in school. So they just want me to try different things, and, you know, they just say that education isn't everything, and I do agree with that. If you are the type of person that education, like school, is not for you, then you gotta do what's best for you. So with that being said, I am gonna try different things, but if that doesn't work out, I've also told my family that, you know, in the end, I'll come back to school. Like, I'm willing to work with them if they're willing to work with me, you know what I mean?
Yes. If you could send any message to the disabled community, or the able-bodied community for that matter, about what it takes to be a person of strength, just to follow your own path, what would you say?
Everybody's got it inside them. And I know it's easier said than done. Trust me, I have been there. Been there, done that. I'm only going to be 21 in December. But the words I live by at the deepest, darkest moments that I've been, and I've been in a few of those in the past year, I always curl up on my bed, basically, and say, just wait for tomorrow. Tomorrow will be better. And yes, it may take 5 days, it may take 2 months, and it may take 5-10 years for tomorrow to get here. But tomorrow is a metaphor. I'm just saying, if you live past the struggling points, you'll get to where you want to be.
So in other words, if you live in hope enough days, sooner or later it's justified.
It's gonna pay off, yes.
So, what are the next steps for you in your journey?
Right now, my own personal step is to make sure that I sit comfortably with knowing how I feel and how I am, and get comfortable enough so that I don't second guess myself, so that I can sit strong in believing who I am. And just let the other people in my life catch up when they have to catch up. And some days I know that's going to be harder, and some days I know it'll be easier. I mean, today I am wearing, you know, it's not feminine, but it is, you know, girly clothes. And yesterday I was in a thick sweater. And I call that dressing like a girl today, and yesterday I was a tomboy. It's finding and make sure of what makes everybody happy. And sometimes that is really hard, even for me.
I'd thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Not a problem. I'm happy to help.
A remarkable story of strength and determination. But there had to be a toll, stress-wise. And here to discuss the impact that stress can have on a person, we have past guest Kira Royal. So in regards to the story I was telling you about, can you relay to me how stress can negatively impact a person, particularly in a student's life?
Yeah, it can really, it can affect their academics. If their mental health function isn't good, it can affect the concentration of their academics, their attendance of classes, as well as the story related, that's a really stressful situation, and that can affect multiple things. It can affect housing. Although there's human rights protections, a lot of people who identify as transgender do not have, they can't find stable, proper housing that is up to regulation. So that adds to the stress of a student, especially in a time where students can barely afford to eat.
So, as one who's overcome her own personal type of stress, can you suggest a few things that might alleviate some of the difficulties?
Yeah, for sure. Really reaching out to counseling services, whether that be the on-campus counseling services that are free to students, or going to a help center in the community, or even there's even online chat rooms now which have social workers in them to help, which is a great resource to connect with a professional. And things you can do on your own is making sure you have somebody you can talk to. And if you don't have a support network, making sure you can find some strategies that work for you, whether that be breathing techniques, if you like going for runs, anything that's like that, that can really help you alleviate that stress.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need to overcome these myths and stereotypes and just embrace equality, what might you say?
I would say, I think in the words of our Prime Minister, it's 2016. It's time that we really fight for the human rights of all. And we need to really inject more funding into mental health care. And we also need to really stand with those who identify as trans. We need to stand with them and be there in solidarity, because they deserve the human rights that we all have.
So, do you see us as a society taking steps forward? Are we making progress?
I think there's definitely been some steps forward, maybe not as drastic as we wanted to see or like to see. But in regards to mental health, there is the big movement now that's breaking down stigma. We have awesome groups at the University of Windsor campus, like Jack.org, the Mental Health Awareness Club, clubs like that that are really trying to break down the barriers. And we're really starting to see the importance of psychologists and social workers in our community. And as in regards to trans rights, I think we are making some steps, but there's a lot that can be done, and there's a lot of discrimination that has to be brought down.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep, no worries.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned. After our break, we'll be hearing about Aboriginal Disability Awareness Month.
Delta Zetas are some of the most devoted students at the University of Windsor. Our sorority is built upon four pillars: academics, sisterhood, philanthropy, and leadership. We are known as successful women on campus and leaders within our community. Right now, we are looking for amazing women to join our sisterhood. For more information, check out Delta Zeta on Facebook.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from our anonymous contributor and Kira Royal, both of whom talked about the stress that transgender issues can have in the life of a student. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Neil Belanger, who will be telling us about the latest happenings in terms of Aboriginal Disability Awareness. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with Aboriginal Disability Awareness.
Thanks, Cam. So this month, November 2016, marks the second anniversary here in British Columbia. In 2015, the BC First Nations Summit, the Métis Nation BC, and the province of British Columbia all declared Mental Health Month. And since that time, we've been working with governments and Indigenous leadership across Canada to have it incorporated in different regions as well. So in 2016, we saw the province of Saskatchewan and the Council of Yukon First Nations also declared. So it's been a positive couple years, and looking forward to it forward.
So in terms of actual raising awareness, What sorts of things are being done through this month?
So today we have a couple of our staff are up island here on Vancouver Island up in Chandler's territory at a community event giving information about Indigenous disability and some of the programs that we deliver. Later on this month I'll be participating in a speech at a university on the mainland. We're having a small event here in the office next week to recognize and celebrate the month. And we'll be doing a number of community meetings as well. And a number of our partner agencies are also doing more activities. Vancouver Island Health Board is doing some stuff in the community. Plans, like dynamic network, giving information out. So it's growing, and we hope for a lot more next year as well.
So in terms of disabilities themselves, how does the Aboriginal community tend to respond? Is there any difference from any other group in society, or?
Well, every group, every individual, every family that lives with disabilities are important, and they all face very unique challenges. Within the Indigenous population of Canada, we know that the rates of disability are approximately twice that of the general population. And often, unfortunately, within Indigenous communities, there is a higher level of poverty. And of course, from impoverished communities, impoverished neighborhoods, a higher frequency of disabilities. They also deal with a number of issues, remoteness, transportation issues, connectivity, and attitudinal barriers that not only are experienced by individuals with disabilities, but also for being Indigenous. So there's a number of things that people we serve in the community deal with, and the idea of the month is to raise awareness of some of those issues, bring partnerships forward, more collaboration, more connectivity to really highlight the issues and help deal with them.
So, have there been any challenges in establishing this month?
Not this month. I mean, it's new. It's never been done anywhere in the world before. So last year, 2015, was the first time that an Indigenous-specific Disability Awareness Month was seen anywhere in the world. We are working, as I said, with problems across Canada, and some have required us to engage each of their Indigenous organizations or communities directly, and we're in the process of doing that. And we're still waiting to hear from some. So I think we haven't had any negative response from leadership, whether it's provincial or Indigenous, and we'll just go forward. It's going to take some time. New things do take time, but I think it will be very beneficial, and we just want to see it just be something that happens. So we're quite pleased so far. We'll continue to move forward.
So how are the Indigenous people that you partner with responding to this idea?
Oh, it's very supportive. I think the vast majority believe that it's long overdue. One partner I forgot to mention that actually proclaimed the month while with the Assembly of First Nations. They did it this year as well. So no, it's been overwhelmingly great. We have to do more outreach work in relation to the month and make sure it's out there all the time. We have a number of programs run here, so sometimes things get put on the back bench. But we're anticipating that we'll have more Indigenous leadership organizations and more communities and provinces and territories signed up for recognition. So it's been very good.
So if you could send any one message to the community about the need for greater awareness and inclusion in this way, what would you say?
I would say to everyone across Canada, Indigenous and non, we have to establish better partnerships and more collaboration within the disability sector. Many organizations are frightened or don't know how to engage Indigenous people, Indigenous communities, and we have to break down those barriers. I think some great programs are delivered through the Indigenous sector and great programs provincially and community-based organizations. And we've got to find that common ground, support each other, and work together for the betterment of everybody. Although we're an Indigenous organization, we're keenly interested in all people who live with disabilities, and they're moving forward and working with governments to ensure that we have programs and services in place to make sure that everybody is included
So, what steps would you suggest that we as a society take to break down some of those myths and misperceptions?
Well, I think there has to be, like I said, better outreach, both from the indigenous community, but also from the disability groups as well. Often we're consulted at the end of things. We need to be a player at the table all the time. And like I said, it's a reciprocal relationship. And it takes time. It takes trust building. We're well aware of the traumatic history of indigenous people in Canada, and we've got to work, understanding that that's still out there, still being dealt with. Just reach out. If you're a disability organization and there's a need, or if you're an indigenous community, indigenous health organization, reach out. The worst thing that can happen is nothing. We need to start making these steps towards each other. And mistakes will be made for sure, but we learn from our mistakes and we just continue to move forward.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. Absolutely astonishing that as advanced as we are, as much as we know, we still, as a people, are inclined to deny opportunities to our fellow human beings, regardless of where we come from, how we feel, how we move, how we think. We are all people, and we should all be given the same considerations and respect as anyone. The fact is, for a person who is struggling with coming out of impoverished circumstances or even trying to find out who they are and how they fit in the world, it's not okay to say, we have compassion for you because you were in a terrible accident, you now have paralysis, and to say, we don't have compassion for you because your circumstances aren't what we're necessarily comfortable with, or you are trying to become something that's not necessarily fitting into our scheme of what life should be. It's not okay for us to deny anyone opportunity. The fact of the matter is, we have to keep pushing forward as a people. We have to keep asking the questions, is this truly equal? Are there real opportunities out there for people with disabilities, regardless of where they come from, what their beliefs are, what background they may have? If our actions match our ideals, then we can create a better future from these opportunities. Any person with a disability has the right to learn and grow and contribute to society just as much as anyone else. And as long as we continue to recognize that there is a strength in these people, a great courage, especially for a person who identifies as being transgendered, it's not okay for us as a society to say, because this isn't something we understand or are necessarily comfortable with, that we're going to assume that because this is how you feel, this is what you believe, that you're in some way mentally incompetent, that you're in some way incapable of making that decision for yourself or the decision of being educated. Everyone, no matter where they come from, who they are, has the right to better themselves. And if that means your heart and your emotions work a little differently, so be it. We as a society have to recognize that you too are entitled. Same is true of indigenous peoples. Throughout history, there have been incidents of inequality. I believe personally that if we stop dwelling on these issues, if we just look at any person coming in from a First Nations group as just a person, and we treat them with respect and consideration, maybe these issues will start to shrink. Fact is, we can spend all of eternity dwelling on the question of what one group did to another, but we need to look at the question of, what can one group do to support another now? It's true of both guests today. For Neil's group, First Nations, we should be asking the question, are we going to continue to live in our ignorance about disabilities among the First Nations people? Or are we going to extend them the same rights and the same considerations as we would anyone else? For our anonymous guest, we must ask the question, are we going to forever discriminate against a person simply for being who they are, feeling what they feel? If so, we as a society are taking one very large, very ugly backslide. A lot of us talk about equality and moving forward, but there is still this unspoken sort of prejudice in these ways. And why is it? Why can't we just accept others? No two people are exactly the same. Even if you successfully cloned a person, they would have different experiences, different personalities. In effect, they would be two different people. We all have something that makes us unique, something that makes us special. And as I've said so many times before, we're not looking to create the impossible standard. We are not looking to discriminate for this or that and then add on another thing. Can't include you for this. Oh, but we can't include you for that either. Sooner or later, you create a standard no one can live up to. And if we want to live in a world where everyone assumes there's going to be judgment and prejudice, that's exactly how to create one. But if we want to speak with courage and truth and enlightenment, and listen to what these people have to say, then we can make progress. We can move forward. It begins with talking about these matters. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. But it is a step forward for Neil's story, that we have a new Aboriginal Disability Awareness Project. That is something just amazing. But the question is, will it always be contingent on a certain group? Or, one day, will we choose to look at all people among the disabled community as being just a part of the puzzle? And create just a Disability Awareness Month. What I would think of that would be a time and a place where it's okay to speak of these issues openly. And that's how it should be. We as a society can't just tiptoe around these matters. We have to educate ourselves. We have to know something about disabilities. For inevitably, each one of us will encounter somebody who's been affected in some way. And information is truly the key. If you know that people are unique and diverse, you can keep an open mind. And that, my friends, is the first stepping stone to the great bridge of equality. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.